Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome, 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 welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work. This is a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it's a podcast that's hosted by me, Kyle Sconewill, and my longtime friend from work, Robbie Earle. It has genuinely been a couple of weeks since we last spoke, Robbie, so I hope you're doing well. Tell me about your life.
It's been a stretch.
Mm-hmm.
Life is good. Got all the things happening, lots of work, more surgery, and moving. So
you bought a house.
We did buy a house. We are now going to be official, formal Austinites, which really, though, joke's on us because Texas doesn't have any state income tax. That is great. But
I was so late on the other one.
I thought that was just like, yeah, no taxes, which yeah. I mean,
true.
But they get you with the property taxes. That's the thing. So we kind of felt like we were gaming the system by renting. But here we are, taxpaying citizens again.
You're going to love it.
We're excited. It's our strategy has been to just pack as many significant life events into one like quarter as possible. And so far, really nailing it. Really nailing it. I think this is also the first time we've talked since, is the last time we talked when we rolled out 2.0?
Yes. Yes. So not only all of your life events, but also all of our podcast life events as well. So, which I want to say, special shout out to the people who have already signed up to be a best friend or super friend. Robbie and I have been truly blown away. It's amazing. So it's going to be a really fun thing. If you have no idea what we're talking about, go check that episode out. It's called Announcing Friends from Work Plus 2.0. We'll be talking about over the next few months, I'm sure, a lot. Mm-hmm. But actually a brand new episode of Friends from Work Plus today. From yours truly. So just a lot of fun stuff going on over there. And by the way, Friends from Work Plus is not only now on Patreon, it's also on Spotify. It had already been on Apple, and now it's also on Substack. And speaking of Substack, even if you don't want to pay anything monthly for Friends from Work Plus, you can subscribe to the newsletter there for free, which is extra fun because we're trying to make that a more regular thing. But also our longtime listener friend, Greg, mm-hmm. is now partially contributing to that newsletter. And that's been really fun because Greg, if you are on our Discord, you would know him as like the Twitter sleuth. And so he is on top of all things MCU news, way above and beyond what Robbie and I do. And so to have him now writing a little news roundup on that newsletter is unbelievable as well. So shout out to Greg, shout out to everyone who signed up for Friends from Work Plus, and check out that episode if you have no idea what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you mentioned that because I did want to remind folks to go check out Substack in general. What we've had going there, we've got a weekly newsletter that I think is like 10 installments in, and yeah, we did just incorporate our water cooler section mm-hmm. With all the MCU news. It's also going to be where you can get the Friends from Work news and just some kind of fun recommendations and. Last week, Kyle chimed in. Candace has chimed in before. That's been really fun. And it's kind of our first time that we have a written thing that's getting out on a weekly basis. So even if you don't use that as a vessel for 2.0 stuff, it's still a platform that's worth checking out.
Special shout out to all the Minnesota Vikings, Detroit Lions, and Chicago Bears fans today. I never bring up sports on this podcast, or very rarely, except when it's absolutely groundbreaking news, which is what happened about an hour ago when Aaron Rodgers was traded to the Jets. So for all of our Packers listeners out there, we have a Discord channel. You can chime in on the sports news. I'd love to hear what you think. But also, yes, congratulations to an Aaron Rodgers free division.
What's the Aaron Rodgers status these days? Do people like him or not like him? I
have so many takes on this that I can't get into. So maybe we'll have to start a sports podcast. But I think that's fair.
These are the kinds of sports questions that I ask Kyle.
Sure.
I'm like, Golden State, are they still, they're still winning? Good. Okay.
They're still pretty good. Dallas is not as good anymore. A lot of drama over there. I say that for you.
No, I know. I did catch that, sadly.
Okay. And since it's been a while since we talked, I wanted to ask you a couple of questions before we got into our Guardians of the Galaxy coverage. Just because I was curious about your take on these two things. We haven't even talked behind the scenes about this. So one, what did you think of the Marvels trailer?
Oh, man. Yeah, we haven't gotten to talk about that.
It's been a while.
Well, and that dropped right after we kind of had our big Secret Invasion update, right? And mm-hmm. and we did our Far From Home rewatch episode. So yeah, it was our big kind of talk all things Skrulls, and then this.
Well, we had talked about how Secret Invasion could affect that movie. Yeah. But we didn't actually have the trailer then. So
I need to watch it again. I think my first big takeaway that was kind of surprising to me is how much of Kamala we get, like, not just Kamala the character, but like her family, the set that we've seen in the show. Like, it seems like there's going to be a big focus on her. Like, it's not just like she's tacked on.
Totally. And no commentary on the positive or negative side of this, just pointing out a fact. Okay. It seems like in general, this movie has really shifted from Captain Marvel 2 to very much emphasizing the Marvels. Like, Tiana Paris is in it a lot, too. You're right. Kamala is a huge factor here. So this is not just a Captain Marvel sequel, it appears.
Well, and I just watching it, one, I love the vibe that we're getting. You and I were really excited just about the post-credit scene for Ms. Marvel, which was directed by Nita Costa, mm-hmm. just in how it feels like Brie Larson is on the same page mm-hmm. with her director sort of for the first time. And that's also, like, we've talked about that a lot. I'm not saying that other past films, it was a problem of Brie Larson's. I just think that there were certain miscommunications where, like, I never felt like the character fully came alive as much as I have just in that trailer and in that post-credit scene. Like, the bits of Brie Larson that we have gotten, it just feels so much more settled in, mm-hmm. but also more exciting and dynamic. Like, even the character design feels like it's just got more personality to it. Mm-hmm. So I am really excited about that part, but also I'm excited about, like, to your point with adding in both Monica and Kamala. I think the more I'm thinking about it and the more I think about this whole premise of them all shifting and swapping places, it's going to be interesting to have one character that is kind of obsessed with Carol and then another character that seemingly that used to be obsessed with Carol, right? Like, she was in the same spot as a little kid, and now, based on the little bit we get from WandaVision, seems to maybe have like a bit of a grudge or at least some unresolved feelings.
Burned out by Carol or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That was my take too. It looks fun. It looks like it's got the tone more correct and has a good vibe. So we'll see. I'm excited for it.
What do you think about the actual premise of them all switching places?
I love it. I
think it's unique.
I also like the trailer because we don't know anything, right? All I know is they're trading places, but I don't know why that would have a larger effect or how that's gone awry or why that's mm-hmm. bad, you know what I mean? Or whatever.
Right.
So kind of fascinated. like a trailer that doesn't reveal too much.
Oh, totally agree. Yeah.
Okay, my second question before trivia. Did you see the Reed Richards rumor / news? Yes or no?
I did, but only because of our new newsletter.
Okay.
Which informed me.
The last little point there. It's not 100% final, but reportedly very close that Adam Driver has been cast as Reed Richards in the next Fantastic Four film. Your reaction?
I love it.
Do you?
So Candace and I were talking about this last night. I think, and this is not just because I think Adam Driver is a great actor, although I do, but I think he's kind of perfect for this, if this winds up being true, in that Reed, as opposed to, like, if Tony is kind of the lovable asshole rich guy that RDJ pulls off so well, Reed is the super rich guy, the super smart guy that's good, but so smart that he can be kind of cold. Like, everything's so calculating. And so I think you need an actor that can pull that off in ways that I think Adam Driver's kind of perfectly suited for. Like,
okay.
Not only because of, I mean, he's been in so many, if you talk about like his performance in Marriage Story, just as a testament to his acting ability, then that's one thing. But also even looking at like the best parts of The Last Jedi, where I feel like he has this way of really, it's this like, I'm a good guy that is maybe like burdened with something that I am wrestling with, or like that I can't totally get over. And I think that's the energy that I kind of want from a Reed Richards.
Okay.
And I think that John Krasinski, again, is also a great actor. And I think if that were to happen, I wouldn't be upset per se, but I don't know that John Krasinski is an actor that I've seen have that, the ability to deliver that nuanced of a performance. The more I think about it, the more I think that there's going to be a lot of subtlety required for a character like that to work. Mm. And so that's my ranting way of saying I'm excited about the possibility.
Yeah, 100%. The thing I like about Adam, or even John Krasinski, honestly, is I'm glad you touched on Tony Stark, because I want this character to feel different than Tony Stark. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're not careful, right, I don't want him to turn into a super sarcastic, quippy. And I feel like both John and Adam, but especially maybe Adam, I don't think that's the trope he'll fall into. Like, I don't...
Right.
I think right away by casting Adam, you made him different now from Tony Stark.
Mm-hmm.
Adam and Robert Downey Jr. as actors, I don't think are similar very, very much at all, really. So,
yeah.
And you're right. I actually, in my Sunday selection from a couple weeks ago, just watched Black Klansman, which stars Adam Driver. And so I'm fresh off Adam Driver, like literally a week and a half ago. And Yeah, I think this would be really, really fun. Now the next thing is the rest of the cast. I've seen rumors about Mila Kunis as Sue Storm and all these other tiny little, we'll see. Tiny little rumors. The Adam one is like a legit thing, I think. These others are just kind of all being tossed out.
Man, I don't know if this was all, if it's just taking them this long to settle, or if this is all some masterful marketing ploy.
Yeah, good point.
But can you remember another time in the history of the MCU where there was this much like suspense around a casting decision?
Well, film. I don't know that we've ever cared about casting decisions before a movie comes out until we see the movie. And then you can be like, well, that didn't work.
Yeah, at least not film for this long.
Yeah, no, like, I think you're right.
I mean, like I feel like Lord of the Rings, there was a lot of stuff going on, but that was also like the late 90s. So I feel like it's... If that's the last big moment, crazy. But it's really like I'm excited. I hope that they give us like a Fantastic Four member per day kind of a thing.
Oh, or at least per week.
Tease it out. Yeah.
All right. So it's been a long time since I caught people up on my rewatch journey. That's partially because you and I decided to go back and actually start doing full episodes on each phase four project. So that's taken some of the conversation over there, which, by the way, we did the first three movies of phase four in our watch order already. You can go back and listen to those episodes, WandaVision, Falcon Winter Soldier, and Spider-Man Far From Home. But personally, on my rewatch, I am up to Black Panther Wakanda Forever. Have not watched it yet. But I have 5 trivia questions, one that I need to give an answer to, and then 4 you've not heard that I am going to play for you as well. Again, so much stuff has been rolling out over here at Friends From Work that I have stopped mailing out shirts for first winners. But if you just like doing it, you can still message me. It's fun. And part of the reason I'm doing that is because there may be a new Friends From Work merch item coming very soon as well. So our attention has shifted gears. And man, there's just been so much coming out. We'll have to do a newsletter post of just everything so people know where to find it at some point.
Yeah.
Jeez. Okay. So trivia going all the way back to Thor Love and Thunder. Okay, these are for you, Robbie. Ready? I already asked you this one, but we'll see if you remember this. What jersey was Valkyrie wearing at the very end of the film when she's teaching the kids the swords? You didn't know it before. Do you have any idea now?
I think... Is it a real team?
No.
Is it like the is it like the new Asgard Vikings or something?
Oh, close. Like, new Asgard Kings.
Oh, okay. That's so that makes sense with the Valkyrie. Okay, fair.
Yeah, really good, though. That was really good.
Just pull the VI out.
So, question number 2 from Loki. This is probably the easiest one I've ever asked, okay?
Well, now I'm going to feel terrible if I don't get it.
Yeah, well, pressure. Which hunter lost her mind and eventually died? What was that hunter's number? Now, this one's not a deep cut because they say this number like...
Is it like C20?
Exactly right. Oh, C20. Man. I need to have this ready. Hold on. Here we go. Okay, C20, correct. All right, question number 3 from Spider-Man No Way Home, which I can't get into it now, but we got to talk about that movie. I watched the extended cut for the first time ever. And yeah, we'll just need to cover that movie in the order.
Yeah.
It's a masterpiece still. Masterpiece. Yeah. Okay, towards the beginning, Robbie, Doctor Strange says they've actually used this forgetting spell before.
Uh-huh.
What was the other case they used it for that he brings up to Wong?
It was the party in Kamertage? Was it in Kamertage?
I'll accept it.
Thanks.
The full moon party in Kamertage. Yep.
Okay. Because it's like, do you remember exactly? Right.
That's pretty good. Yeah. He says no. Yeah. Okay. Question number 4, which another thing I can't wait to get back to, Hawkeye. It's that Thanos meme. Perhaps I treated you too harshly. That's Hawkeye. Here we go. Hawkeye. This might be another contender for easiest if you've seen Hawkeye a few times. What company does Kazi and a lot of the other tracksuits actually say they work for? What is the fake company that's like the shell company?
Not Trustabro?
No. I'm saying they have like the Trustabro, but all of those people say they work for this company, which turns out to not be real.
Yeah, I feel like I can only... I keep thinking of Sloan, but that's not...
That's it!
Really?
Sloan and Sloan Limited.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my gosh.
Crazy. I don't know where these are coming from.
Why did you think of Sloan?
I don't know. I was trying to think back
Sam
to
Wise,
like...
by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, bud.
That was his answer. But I...
that's incredible.
It's somewhere in there. It's so rolling around.
You're 3 for 4 with... Basically, almost 4 for 4 when you said New Asgard Kings. You said Vikings. Wow. Really close. All right, last question from the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special.
Ooh, okay. This might be tough.
This is a really tough one. Towards the very beginning, mm-hmm. when it's an animated section still. Uh-huh. Kraglin and Peter are going over this new gift they have for Yondu. And Yondu gets real mad and uh-huh. says, if you do that again, I'm going to make you clean the latrines for a year. And Kraglin says, oh, that's Blank's favorite job. Whose favorite job is that? Clean the latrines.
Oh, gosh.
He's like, but if I did that, then, you know, so-and-so, that's his favorite job. This is a deep cut.
Is it Taserface?
Nope. Okay, close. So I'll leave that one open-ended for now so that people can write in if they know that one.
So here's the thing with the holiday special is in our...
Oh, yeah, I know.
In our big watch order that we talked about...
Sorry.
It's just that this is on me. The finale is Multiverse of Madness, and I decided that ultimately, for me at least, I liked having both Werewolf by Night and the holiday special, the Guardians holiday special, as kind of like an epilogue after that. And so to be true to that, I put a little break between the end of the Phase 4 stuff and
I get that, you.
And I haven't actually circled back yet, so... But I've also been meaning to rewatch it before the movie, and so it's about to be perfect timing. I'm glad that you watched it because we're about to talk about the entire Guardian story, and that was technically the last installment. So you'll be our holiday special expert today.
Well, and I apologize because that's my only deviation from our watch order in that instead of making it an epilogue, first of all, I watched Werewolf by Night in the original Phase 4 watch order, which was a mistake. And then Guardians of the Galaxy, I threw after Hawkeye just because it's a Christmas thing and I wanted to stay in the Christmas vibe. So
yeah.
That is the only place that I've deviated. But I realize I caught you off guard there. That's my bad.
Well, it is a... How did you feel like it fit next to Hawkeye, by the way?
I like it, and weirdly, tonally, you know, Hawkeye has a few lighthearted things in that finale after a somewhat not that lighthearted thematic show that actually I think transitioned pretty well.
Yeah.
When you throw No Way Home in there too, you kind of just stay in a little Christmas winter era for a while. But
yeah, which I
it's
don't.
It's not super tied no matter what, really. So,
right. I asked because I've thought about that and gone back and forth. I think one thing that I still like and that we'll probably talk about here in a second is that I just feel like there's such a change in Groot's appearance by the time we get to the holiday special, whereas there really wasn't between like Endgame and Love and Thunder, for example. And so I kind of feel like there should be a little bit more time.
He hit puberty quickly.
Yeah, very quickly. Which apparently that seems to be more or less where we're going to find the character in volume 3.
Which is exactly what I wanted to talk about for the rest of today. This saga so far is unique for quite a few reasons. First of all, the last saga so far we did, Ant-Man and the Wasp, we split into kind of two different things. We did a saga so far, but then we also did a friendly reminder, which was like a shortened version of it and didn't have our structure fully set. Now we do. This is going to be a classic saga so far episode, but we are still going to make a friendly reminder for YouTube that we are super stoked on, especially for a movie like Guardians, where I think the franchise brings in some fans that maybe not even are MCU fans. So making a 10-minute video catching people up on where they've been, I think is a perfect tool before seeing this movie. So we are excited about that. Be on the lookout for that on YouTube in the next week or so. But also, because that holiday special came out just in, I think, November or early December, we did a saga so far before the holiday special for the Guardians. So today will not be maybe as in-depth as that, but I did want to kind of look at it a slightly different way. And I've been watching some of the press tour from the Guardians Volume 3 press tour that's going on over in Europe and whatnot. And I've been seeing, obviously, like when the actors go on the late night shows and stuff like that. I watch that stuff on lunch breaks and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of actually framed my mind in a really helpful way, I think, for this discussion. And so I'm excited to get into it. And I want to view it more as a Guardian specific saga so far. I know they're always character specific, but you really kind of realize that the Guardians are their own family. And it's like the one franchise that we don't ask, like, where have they been? Why aren't they helping? Like, they kind of have a free pass to be in the MCU, but in a totally different part, to where you're not right. Like, well, why don't they call Captain Marvel, you know, in space?
Right.
And I think that that has given them a unique space, and I think that allows us to talk about it in a unique way. So I'm excited to get into our Guardians of the Galaxy Saga So Far episode. I did want to tell people that we are excited to partner again with Organic Price Books, our favorite comic book place. And so I want to ask you, by way of a setup, what are some books that people could be looking into for the Guardians of the Galaxy stuff?
Yeah, so I'm excited about this, and I just missed the, like, I think that they will be delivered here momentarily. So next week I'll actually have some of these books to talk to folks about. But it works out where Marvel has just recently released a couple books that I think will be worth checking out. And I'll maybe even list a few different ones kind of over the next few weeks. But there is an Adam Warlock omnibus that just came out that features basically all of the original classic, like 70s Adam Warlock stuff that was largely written by folks that were dropping acid, which makes for a just fantastic read. And then the recent Guardians of the Galaxy run by Al Ewing has now been collected in kind of an oversized paperback. Those are both available, and I think those contain some of the readings that we're going to wind up going through over on the Friends from Work Plus Comics Corner. But if you're interested in just kind of generally getting some more information, especially on Adam Warlock, I think that's a really great resource. And Al Ewing, friend of the pod.
Yes.
Is one of those comics writers that just doesn't make bad comics. And I, as someone that's kind of struggled to find Guardians comics that I connected to in the same way that I do the films, I've really enjoyed Ewing's run. And I think that there's actually kind of a lot there that you'll notice potentially being riffed on, at least from the trailers, like it, even down to the uniforms looking and a bit more kind of Nova Corps-esque. And so those are, but all kinds of stuff in the Guardians world if you go to organicpricebooks.com.
And you're going to hear us talk about them a lot because we're excited to be working with them again. Truly, you're going to find the best prices at Organic Price Books. That's just the reality. It blows our mind that they can offer things as cheaply as they do. So if you're into collecting comics, especially big omnis, use your Flippy from signing up from Friends from Work Plus, and use our promo code Friends from Work to save you a few bucks off your order. And that lets them know that we sent you and you're not going to regret. They ship them really nicely. Like you'll get them on time. You're not going to regret buying it from there.
I just want to say also, there was a book I was looking for that Organic Price Books didn't have. And I ordered from someone else and it came kind of banged up. And it was a reminder that we say that like they ship well. And I don't know if people realize, but it's like when you're spending anytime you get one of these big hardcovers, you know, you're looking at spending at
like
least
$100,
like,
right?
Yeah, like somewhere. And the crazy thing is sometimes OPB will have them for like in the 70s. But even then, that's a lot of money. And then for the book to come and be damaged at all,
yeah, it's frustrating.
Kind of a bummer.
Yeah, so. Bummer. All right, let's get into Guardians of the Galaxy Saga So Far after a quick word from these sponsors. Robbie, here's how I want to frame it. Before we go back through each project, I was struck by the overarching plot as I've been going back through some of these films. And one of the interesting things is I think we find the Guardians at a pretty operational point. So much of phase four has been a deconstruction of the character. It's been, we're finding them at a low point, or they're reflecting on what they've lost from Endgame. Or they're not a team that's fully ready to go. That's been so much of the story of phase four. This, I'll be fascinated to see what happens in Guardians Volume 3, because really the last thing we saw from the Guardians was in Thor Love and Thunder and in the holiday special. It seems like they are operating at a pretty high level team. They have their stuff emotionally together. The holiday special was pretty special as far as Quill is truly the leader. He seems like he's got things under control. His connection now with Mantis, they seem to all like each other. Nebula has grown as a character. Obviously, Gamora is the one wild card here, but it's interesting because, you know, really Guardians 1 was about them forming. It's this misfit team. And then Guardians 2 was really about all the drama that that brought between them, between their parents, etc. And yet now we are getting a look at a Guardians team that operates, like you said, even in the Nova Corps type uniforms as like a full-blown team. In a lot of ways, it feels like an Age of Ultron era to jump in with the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Wow. That's actually a really good, that's a really good point. Because even, I think, yeah, I mean, the first film can kind of be the, if you're looking at it through the lens of family, it is the coming together of that. And in a very different way than we got in the Avengers, where you have a lot of language around family, and you also have, like, you have Gamora that is a daughter of Thanos, but also basically orphaned. And then you have Quill, obviously, that's coming from a similar place and that he's never known his dad, and his mom died. And so I feel like you have the building, and then in volume two, like you said, it's the dysfunction of a family. And then now it looks like we're getting this kind of, like the bond of a family kind of a film.
Here's what James Gunn said today. Found this fascinating. The first movie is really about Quill and his mother, a relationship between a son and his mother. And the second movie is about the relationship between Quill, or a son, and his father, and even in some ways an adopted father, and what that looks like to, in some ways, have a adopted father be more of your father than your actual father. And then James Gunn said volume three is going to be about us, like them together, every one of them looking at the relationship with themselves and each character realizing they have stuff they have to work through about themselves. And I thought that was fascinating. He pointed out, obviously, Rocket, what he's gone through. And I think that's going to be a huge through line for volume three. But he talked about what Nebula's gone through, what Quill's gone through, what Drax has gone through, and like them all having to reflect on that. So the first one being mother, the second one being father, the third one being yourself.
So that's fascinating to me, especially what you were saying about Rocket, because one thing that I'm always struck by with these movies is how much they have been a separate thing, and also how much those characters and characters that those movies introduced wound up being really central to Infinity War and Endgame, which are the most MCU movies ever. And so I wonder, with James Gunn, who has kind of talked about having this three-part story, and in some ways it's felt like he's tried to even carve that back in after Infinity War and Endgame made use of those characters so much. Not to say that he had, and I think he consulted on the stories for those, so I'm not saying that he was against that, but it just seems as though he's really wanting to have this viewed as a trilogy. So I'm really curious then how he would view the level of development we got for Rocket specifically, because Rocket was a huge part of the kind of moral center of Infinity War. And then in Endgame, he's really the only Guardians character, he and Nebula, but more so Rocket, I would say, that we got those kind of meaningful, you know, benchmark moments with.
Good point. You know, James Gunn called it a trilogy plus. That's what I saw. So he is acknowledging that those other movies, you know, were a factor. And you're right. He was a part of it. Like, I know he was integral in choosing Rubber Band Man as part of the soundtrack, et cetera. So, yeah, those are partially his films as well, or at least how those characters are handled. But, yeah, we know what happened with Love and Thunder, where he was thrown off and didn't necessarily want to have to deal with the ramifications of that film, you know? So let's go back here. If, again, if you want all the detail on the actual plot, check out our friendly reminder coming this week or later next week on YouTube. But obviously, Guardians of the Galaxy 1, I just got to say, an absolute masterpiece still. I rewatched it not that long ago. I would argue it ages almost as well as any film they've ever made. Like, that would be the one where, like, even though it was made almost 10 years ago now, it does not feel like it. In the special effects, it doesn't. In the music, it doesn't feel dated. Like, the costumes don't. It still hits emotionally. I don't know how, in my opinion, an absolute masterpiece. But
that's...
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, that it's funny you say that about it not seeming dated, because...
I know.
This is not in any way a knock against this movie. I actually think it's one of the things that I like about these kind of phase two, early phase three MCU films. But like, when you watch Winter Soldier, which came out the same year, there are things about it, not in the effects haven't aged well or whatever, but just stylistically, there are things that feel like, yeah, like this is a movie that would have come out in 2014.
Interesting.
Where I think this Guardians, yeah, it does kind of feel like...
Timeless.
Yeah. Yeah, which there aren't that many movies that I think could be described that way. Right? Okay, at least so not in this genre.
For me, not comparing it to Winter Soldier, because I haven't watched it recently. I mean, I love Winter Soldier. Right. I don't know. I can't speak to that. But just, yeah, I know you do. With Guardians specifically, I do wonder if there's something about the fact that they so embraced the genre when it came out that that's still, it's like Star Wars in that, like, if you go all out in it, it still can be respected years later. Also, the soundtrack, by choosing a dated soundtrack, it's no longer like dated, right? Like, if they had chosen a soundtrack that was early 2000s music, I think you'd look back and be like, wow, I'm tired of hearing Green Day. But because you chose something from so long ago, you know, like, it almost like removes it from that category. And then we've talked about this before. There are certain aspects where if you just go from a costume standpoint all into the actual comicness of it and don't try to modernize it, sometimes that even ages better. Like the actual practical effects of some of these characters and the costumes, it's hard to... Dude, you always say this about Lord of the Rings. I actually saw Two Towers the other day on TV when I was traveling. And you're right. Like, it's stunning how well that still mostly works. Well, part of it is like they leaned into what they actually think they would look like, and it's practical. And you know, so I feel that a little bit with this movie. I know some stuff CGI, obviously, but like it feels like because they leaned into the genre so much, it doesn't age poorly.
Well, I think, and I don't know if James Gunn came in at the right time or why he was even given the amount of agency he was given with this movie. Because it seems like, I know that there were, you know, we've talked about Markson McFeely being credited for apparent like script polishing. So like, I know that Marvel was obviously still overseeing this, but it feels so much like a James Gunn thing, like all of these films do. And I do. It's a good, when you talk about Lord of the Rings, we talk about the difference between practical effects and CGI specifically in the makeup department.
Sure.
Where we've kind of talked about like, what would it look like, you know, if there had been a way to have like a She-Hulk that was more, we had more makeup and less CGI. I don't know if that's doable. Obviously the Hulk is CGI. That's kind of a question that we're past. But we talked about how in the Guardians movies, you get that with Gamora and I think Nebula as well.
Well, and Ronan looks really realistic.
And so much of that I think is, I mean, that's expensive just in terms of time. And the thing about Lord of the Rings that I think really makes it stand out. And the easiest way to do the comparison here is to watch that and then watch The Hobbit, where this was not done as much. But they did put every one of these extras through like hours of orc makeup, like every day they were filming, which is expensive because it's every day you're on set's expensive. And then to do it across all these people. But then you watch the Hobbit movies where they're like, oh, well, now we can just CGI it, right? Because we have CGI that's good enough. And it's like those had aged poorly within like a year of being released comparatively. And yeah. So I do think that I say all that because one thing you and I have talked about with James Gunn is the amount of care and intensity that he puts into each one of these projects to where I do feel like he's one of these guys that just will not let something get out half-baked, or if there's he may make a choice that you just don't agree with or don't like, but it's not ever going to come off as any kind of carelessness.
2014 was such an unbelievable year for the MCU and for film in general, because I think if there was a year where people would start questioning, is there a Marvel formula and are you getting tired of it? You got two films that totally broke the mold. Like, not only is this Guardians movie all the stuff we just talked about, it also introduces an Infinity Stone and like clarifies what that is, which is insane for the MCU. And then Winter Soldier came out and was so stylistically different from what had been made previous. And so like, it'd be impossible to argue that the directors didn't have their touch on those two films during that era, especially, which is crazy. And two films that couldn't be more different from each other, those two in particular. But back to Guardians 1, you know, this is where we meet all of our characters. This is where you start getting the emotional foundation laid, especially with Quill, right? Like this movie, I think one of the reasons I'm so moved by it is just the mother thing. Like, to start off, okay, I still think maybe besides Infinity War, my favorite intro to a film in the MCU ever, in that you get, it's like Up. You get 5 minutes and I'm immediately destroyed. Shout out to that kid actor, because we crush kid actors all the time. Not him. Like 5 minutes of just his mother referencing that his father was an angel. So like already a shout out there. His mother looking so heartbroken and dying. Take my hand, Peter. He's too scared to of what's going on to take her hand. Runs out screaming. The family not knowing how to handle this child who's screaming. And in, I have chills right now. In the screaming, goes outside, and the coolest looking abduction from an alien ship that we've never seen, and then right into my favorite, and that is literally what I thought of when I thought of Marvel for so many years. Like, I thought that intro, him going, Mom, as it fades to white. I have chills right now still this whole time describing it. I love it that much. It is such a special laying of the foundation to right away tonally shift by having Quill now grown up, you know, X amount of years later after 1988 and 89, whatever, 88, 89. And now he's grown up and dancing to the music and that his mom gave him and the tonal shift of the color and all stuff. But anyways, just from a character perspective, it's like only takes him 7 minutes to have me immediately invested.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That's a, it is one of the stronger intros, and especially to be released the time that it was. Cause you're, I mean, we had never, it, in terms of release order, this was the first movie that was not following up or in any way really connected to prior stuff. Like really that was not connected to something that came out of the first Iron Man. Like even Thor, we kind of get the Coulson connection over. It's like they were really carefully making, having everything link back in to that core Avengers team. And so, yeah, just such a couple big swings out the gate with this movie that we've talked about a lot, but really important for, like, if you compare this to how long it took me to care about, like, Chris Hemsworth's Thor or even Steve Rogers. Like, I think that you're right. Like, there is an immediate connection with Peter Quill that winds up serving as a core for all these, but not in a way that I think converts the other characters into side characters.
I am not here to argue that Chris Pratt is as talented as Robert Downey Jr. So don't hear me saying that at all. But it's crazy in listening to him talk this last week about his journey through the MCU and now, which is 10 years, which is crazy. Mm. It feels so similar in so many ways in that, like, he was not on the list of 25 people that should play Star-Lord. He talks about that a lot. James Gunn really took a chance on him. He wasn't like the action movie star at the time. He was a comedy guy from Parks and Rec. He was a little like chubbier. Mm-hmm. He got into shape, and literally this movie like changed his life. He's talking about that. It changed his career forever because through James's help, like now obviously where he's at, but like,
right.
And yet immediately it is settled like Tony, like it, like in the first scene, I already buy the whole character, and that's the only comp I can think of right off the top of my head. Cause you're right. Those others took a little bit of time.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. It's the AC/DC opening in Iron Man. It's the equivalent, I think.
Right. Yeah. But we're not here to talk about the quality. Just, it is fascinating that there's been a journey that these characters have been on as well. And what I do want to focus on from the first movie is that it's a bunch of misfits. It's a bunch of like a ragtag team. And what's kind of cool for me is behind the scenes, the actors have talked a lot about how, like, I think that parallels a lot of their life, that a lot of them weren't the A-lister that should have been cast for the role. And yet James saw something in them despite them being misfits. And so it's been a really cool thing. I think that's what builds that family talk on screen and off screen. Like, James believed in them when other people didn't, just like these characters, you know, had to have some kind of belief when no one else was.
Hmm. I love that.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Anyways, but we meet Rocket, who's kind of like a ragtag, like mercenary, basically just like a bounty hunter looking for money, and his sidekick Groot, who's this tree that talks. You meet Gamora, who becomes a very pivotal character later on because it is the adopted daughter of Thanos. She has a sister, Nebula, who you also meet here. There's obviously a lot of drama there from being tortured daughters of a mad Titan. And you meet Drax, who has had his wife and daughter murdered by Ronan and Thanos. And so he's angry at both of them. And the teaming up of the team just works just like you'd want it to. They all kind of eventually, they argue, they fight, they all want different things. And great lines you get from, like, one of my favorite parts is like when you think Quill is like turned a corner because he sees that the orb is an Infinity Stone and it blows everyone up. And Rocket goes, "You had that in your purse." It's not a purse, it's a knapsack. But then his response, Gamora, who's now, you know, turned her character around, is like, "Peter, we have to give this to the Nova Corps." And he goes, "Right. Or we could sell it to someone for a lot of money who's not going to kill us. Either plan." And it's like, you still learn, like, he's still not like the altruistic, like all good person. And that represents the whole team. And then to have it all come full circle with them deciding to give a, you know what, and to care about this fight, to protect other people that they really don't have to because it's the universe they want to live in. And then to have it come full circle with his mother, "Peter, take my hand," them hold the Infinity Stone, destroy Ronan, and decide to be this team that's going to operate doing a little bit of good, a little bit of bad. That's kind of the first movie.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. I think it's really, I mean, that's kind of the fun thing about that movie is, for as much new mythology as it introduces, it's pretty straightforward in the ways that you need it to be.
Yes. It's not that complex of a plot.
Yeah. I mean, but it's so satisfying. I mean, man, that, again, it's funny to me that the movie that would seem to be the hardest to make work for general audiences is the one that I think general audiences tend to maybe love more than any other. Like, in terms of people that are not inclined to be MCU fans otherwise, like, these are the ones that people so easily gravitate towards. And most of the members of this team are not even like humans.
The Han Solo vibe that Quill carries himself with is so fun. It's so relatable. He's funny, but he has a little bit of a bad side that makes it just, he's got mistakes. Yeah. So it's easy to connect with. One of the fascinating characters here, I think, for Guardians of the Galaxy 3 is Gamora, because we see a Gamora who has kind of already made up her mind that she's going to try to do some of the right things. But there is a version of Gamora out there before this movie that we never really got time with, that is a daughter of Thanos that like helped him do bad stuff. And that's kind of the Gamora we're going to get in Guardians 3, which is fascinating because this is a past Gamora that's still working with Thanos, hasn't had any of that development that we get in these upcoming movies we're about to talk about. That's crazy to me. So like, well, I think that's a cool thing to build a story around.
And we should put a pin in that too, because we did get just a hint of that in Endgame when we were kind of introduced to that version of the character, which is one of the scenes that I'm really grateful that we got with the Guardians in that movie.
Shortly after, the amount of time is debatable. James Gunn says Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 takes place right after Guardians 1. We think there's a few months that have passed because clearly Quill and Gamora have developed more of a relationship. Mm-hmm. Groot has grown up a tiny bit. It's not a day after. It's right. Somewhere in there. What are your big takeaways from the characters in Guardians 2?
So, I mean, you talked about the way James Gunn sees it, and we talked about kind of the general family dysfunction. And I think that is, like, that's the core of that whole movie to me. And I think one thing that Gunn's always done really well is find a theme and make sure that's reflected in every character's arc within that film, and it never feels tacked on, and you never feel like there are loose ends. And so I think on the Quill side, we obviously have this, he finds out who his dad is, but then a moment of him realizing that his dad is not really his dad. His dad is actually Yondu.
Yeah.
But then even Yondu, we see having kind of a similar thing, like his own crisis where he feels like he's disappointed, the Ravager team that kind of adopted him, led by Sylvester Stallone, who right after we said would not feature heavily in this movie, was the feature in a Guardians 3 promo. Then you've got the Gamora Nebula fight, where Nebula, who has gotten away at the end of Guardians, has now come back to kill Gamora because they have this kind of ongoing feud.
Because of their father.
Yes, yeah. And then even, I mean, you get some, and you know, this is where I think it's fair to say you could have gotten more of this, but you even get some stuff with Drax where he's referencing back to the way that his relationship with his wife and kids was. And so it's just, you're seeing like in these ways that it never feel like, even as you're listing it, it sounds so kind of hits you over the head, but it never feels that way. It all feels very natural. The relationship that I think is really the most interesting and you know, arguably at the heart of the movie, because it's the character that we get the kind of closing shot on, is Rocket. Sorry, you're hearing the plumbing in the walls of our house, which is very loud.
not for long. Yes, yes.
But what I think is interesting and kind of unique about Rocket and all of that is that he is the one character that we don't know anything about background-wise, right? Like, everyone else has a backstory involving family or family complications, and Rocket is the one that we don't get any background with there, but we get a lot of focus on how he's kind of just making a point to alienate himself and to push people away. And we get really, really great kind of sync ups between he and Yondu that further kind of each other's arcs. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that moment is so huge at the end of Guardians 2, where as Peter and all of the Guardians and all the Ravagers are kind of realizing who Yondu was and what he meant to them, we're seeing Rocket understand that you know, he can also, there's a level of being able to trust now, knowing that if someone like Yondu can do what Yondu did and still, it sounds cheesy, yes, but still kind of be loved in that way, then
he didn't
Rocket,
put people away.
Yeah, man, that's like craziest thing about Guardians 2 is just how, for as like elite as the opening scene of Guardians 1 is, I feel like Guardians 2 has that with its closing scene, and that it's one of the more emotional things for me in the whole franchise, the whole MCU franchise. But I think it's also important because of how it sets up Rocket in Infinity War and Endgame, where we find him for the first time being kind of a leader himself.
Not to change the subject, but you just got me thinking, like, the only other character we also really haven't seen in the past is Drax. And I wonder with the Dave Bautista stuff, if you'll also get some flashbacks there to his wife.
Oh, right. Like, we haven't literally seen it. Like, we know that he has the story.
Well, because we've seen some flashbacks to Nebula and Gamora, right, and we know what kind of they were like as kids, especially Gamora. And we know Nebula's story. Maybe not the whole story, but we know basically the gist. Obviously, Quill we've gotten. And that kind of makes me think, like, yeah, we don't know Rocket's past like that, but we also, I do wonder if there'll be a couple little toss-ins of Drax as well in the past there. The thing for me about Guardians 2 is, you know, I've complained about the film on this podcast. It's not one of my favorite MCU films at all. It's towards the bottom. But all of my issues almost always are preference or execution things. The actual, like, there are some really good things done in this film. And I think the actual plot and themes are maybe even better than the first movie. Like, in my opinion, all the magic isn't captured, but those themes, the decision to have the film end on Rocket just looking out and having that tear, or him saying, yeah, he didn't push people away. The struggle of the Yondu thing and who's my real father. And then he was your father, but he wasn't your daddy. And then the actual sacrifice there. And then you're right, to tie that all together with actual father and son playing the song from Cat Stevens over top of that scene, the Ravagers showing back up for Yondu in that moment. I actually think that the movie is still doing some heavy lifting that even the first one isn't. So I do love you pointing out Rocket. I do think Rocket's going to also be a huge factor in Guardians 3. So we talked about how I think one of the factors will be the fact that Gamora is a different Gamora. That's a huge driving force of the film. I also think, based off what James Gunn has said, Rocket, this is going to be Rocket's story. And in his opinion, is the protagonist in some ways. So we're going to get more development there. And you're right, I love you pointing out the steps we've already taken. Because somehow we get to Endgame and Rocket's like a team player helping the Avengers. And that is not the same Rocket from the first movie.
And not just helping the Avengers, but really kind of caring for Thor. Yes. Like taking him under his wing, like having the patience to deal with this person that even like the Avengers are kind of like struggling to have patience with.
Or even just the hand out to Nebula to hold hands and that we lost things. Like, that part gets me every time, by the way, because Tony has the reunion with Steve and Pepper, and then you get that shot. I'm like, oh, I'm so glad they included that shot because the Guardians have lost too.
Yeah. Well, and before we get into Infinity War and Endgame briefly, I do want to talk about some of the other things that Guardians 2 set up that I think we're going to revisit. And man, that's one of the things, as an aside, that I think is so interesting about the timing of the Infinity Saga, is it's the same kind of what we talked about with Multiverse of Madness. You have threads that have been dangling here since 2017 that just kind of had to be put on the shelf for a bit until we could get through Infinity War and Endgame. And, you know, kind of same with like Mordo and arguably, you know, stuff in Homecoming, whatever. So it feels like forever since we saw the post-credit scene that tells us about Adam Warlock.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
You know, which here is going to be a result of this opening interaction the Guardians have with
Aisha.
The Aisha. What's the
The high priestess.
The sovereign.
Of the sovereign, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I couldn't remember. But that's the other thing about James Gunn is I just am always so impressed with how much he can do setup without it feeling like setup. Like, he never has to do these exposition dumps. And even when he does do an exposition dump, like in Guardians, where he teaches us what the Infinity Stones are, it's like really fun and we get really cool visuals. And it's just,
there's a little pee coming out of me right now.
Yeah. that's just hard to do. I think the hardest thing to do especially with movies like this is nail the pacing and the amount that's going on. And it's such a, like, so easy to fall on either side of that. And so it is wild how many seeds were planted there.
We are going to land this fish on that James discussion in about 10 minutes just before we set up Guardians 3, because I think that's really important. We're going to come back to that in 1 second. So let's put a pin in that. I think on the plot side too, like, couple things. Peter meets his actual biological dad. It's a celestial or some version of it, which is different than the celestials we've seen elsewhere. But you find out that Peter does have part God power, which is part of the reason he was able to hold the Infinity Stone for as long as he did in the first film. He goes on, you know, a crazy power trip to expand and do all that stuff. So they have to stop him. And so Peter actually ultimately loses that power. So he is just a human again, pre Infinity War, Endgame, and Guardians 3. But also, yeah, you get the setup from Adam Warlock. So that's going to be a big factor. You get the development we talked about of the characters amongst themselves and really kind of a healing between Gamora and Nebula. This being like the big turning point of Nebula, like, committing to being good, quote unquote. Yeah. You know? And then, the loss of Yondu, the addition of Mantis, and a few other things. So those are obviously important going forward as well.
And so a question for you before we transition. Where do you think this movie leaves Adam Warlock's motivation? Or I guess, how do you think that it would set that up, since we don't actually see Adam, but we see the kind of cradle he's in? Like, do you think that we're going to get him sent by the Sovereign on kind of a revenge mission? Do you think it's going to be more complicated than that?
Let me toss it back to you. I have no comics background. Is Adam a fully developed, like, human character with emotions? Or is it like a White Vision type scenario that he could be programmed by the Sovereign to just go kill them?
That is... that's a complicated question. I would say... probably in the most iconic iterations, he would be more Vision-esque, I would think. Maybe more Vision than White Vision.
Okay.
I do think he's got, but it just, it really depends on the era. Like, the early era, he's almost just human.
And he's kind of like a gray area character, right? Like, he's not a villain.
No. I mean, he's actually he's a hero in the... eventually in the comics. Now he has, like, in the most comic booky thing of all time, like, an evil counterpart that's like his own, dude, I'm telling you, these 70s comics were trippy. So he had, like, his own, like, alternate self
in his
psyche emerge. And that's a whole thing. That's a villain, but
I'm only saying it seems like on paper, my guess would be that he is set by the Sovereign on a revenge tour to kill the Guardians, and somewhere in that struggle realizes, like, I shouldn't kill these people. And I could see him then turning good or betraying the Sovereign or whatever, and then him being around for the future. That's what I think is going to happen. I mean, we'll see. He can still pull the rug out from under us, but that's why I ask all that stuff. And I was also curious if he is Vision-esque in that, could he be, like, programmed to do that? Or is he making the choice freely to go attack them? Like, I don't know what his birthing process is like in this scenario.
I do. I think there's more of this, like, he's like, which will work within this framework. He's not robotic. He's more like, he's like elevated, you know, kind of like to this higher level of being, But yeah, I'm also curious because there are some, and we'll get into more of this next week and on Friends from Work Plus, but there's some interplay between Adam Warlock and the High Evolutionary in the comics that I makes their inclusion in the same film make sense to me.
Okay.
But I'm curious how exactly that plays out in the MCU.
Well, and this is why I said that I think that this is kind of the Age of Ultron era, because I think the last scene of Guardians 2 kind of sets us in a similar trajectory for the next like four entries, basically. Like they have mostly healed their inner turmoil by the end of this film via the death of Ego and Yondu and like what that took and what that cost. And I think in Infinity War and Endgame and Thor Love and Thunder, you're basically getting a very similar iteration of the Guardians, which is they are now a team that is going to be in space helping on distress calls, hoping to make money while doing it. But there is a part of them that would do it even if they can't make money, even if they joke about it. But they're going to be out there, and that's what they do for Thor. Like they hear a distress call and they find out that most of Asgard has been destroyed.
Yeah.
And I think that shifts them into, okay, this is serious. And a lot of people already know the plot of Infinity War and Endgame, two of the biggest movies of all time. If you haven't seen them, go watch them. But they help the Avengers in these movies to try to stop Thanos, but ultimately don't. And Gamora gets sacrificed in this by Thanos. So Gamora dies. That's important. And most of the Guardians end up getting dusted away by Thanos, even in their attempt to stop him. But really, from a character perspective, like I said, they're operating functionally, very functionally. Mm-hmm. They're following Quill and his instructions, and they're doing what they're trying to do. Then they get dusted away. They come back at the end game, and same thing. When they come back, they're mostly ready to fight, to help. They're there for the same purpose. They pick up Thor. The only difference being now Gamora is a Gamora from the past. They don't have that relationship. And then the same thing mostly in the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special and Thor Love and Thunder. They're helping Thor fight, you know, do missions in space, protect other people that need help. Very similar to like what Captain Marvel claims to be doing. Mm-hmm. And but it's the same kind of team. Like they're fun. They have teamwork. They're still getting paid for it, but they're helping people.
Minus Gamora.
Again, that's the big kicker. And then holiday special only just strengthened that bond. Peter finds out that Mantis is actually his like half sister via Ego. And Nebula, I think, is another big one, is basically softened as a character a lot at this point and is now on board with something that she was totally anti three movies ago.
Yeah, and tried to kill.
So I bring that all up to say that's what I mean by they seem to be a functioning team at this point.
Right. And it's why I think you probably can just as long as you know basically that Gamora died and there's a Gamora from the past that's been brought back, which I imagine the movie is going to make very clear anyway. I think you're going to be able to watch 1, 2, 3 1, 2 holiday special three.
That's so true.
And that really feel like its own thing, which I appreciate.
But still, it doesn't feel like they are shoehorned into Infinity War Endgame. Like that, no, they still executed it perfectly, but you're right. You wouldn't have to see that part of it.
And that's why I wanted to say kind of one more thing about Peter's arc from Infinity War to where we see him in the holiday special and even in Love and Thunder. Just because I do love even there, kind of off screen from the Guardians franchise, just the arc we get from Infinity War Endgame to Love and Thunder is we still have a Peter that is in Infinity War rash, kind of immature, not really able to control himself. Like when it comes down to it, he can't restrain himself from punching Thanos in the face until he wakes up. And it's, and again, I think I love that scene because it makes sense with what we've known about that character. It's one of those like tropes that when people are like, he would never do this. All he had to do was this. I'm like, well, that's what makes the character human because we all do things all the time that don't make sense. And I love that. And the conversation he has with Tony, who is trying so hard to be a leader and to be measured even while he's feeling the same feelings in different ways. And then to kind of come all the way after he loses Gamora, after he comes back, and now to see Quill like maturing some and actually taking on like not just the leadership of the team, which he's kind of always had, but actually like the qualities of a leader.
Whether you like this or not, a fly on the wall on that Titan scene would probably say, yeah, like Tony Stark is a more mature, developed leader at that moment than the Guardians are. Like, they're kind of the goofballs in this scenario, right? That's the point. But then to come full circle to where by the time we get to Thor, Love, and Thunder, the jokes are now like, they've figured out their stuff emotionally, and Thor is the one that now is needing help. And it's like they've role reversed.
Yeah.
And yeah, right. That's just highlighted in Quill's growth throughout those films.
Even the difference between how Quill interacts with Thor. Like in Infinity War, the first time they meet, he's so threatened, and it's like it's a big ego thing.
Well, and the holiday special did a good job of that too. Like, that is a very mature Quill who's even able to lean into the sincerity of the moment of the Christmas thing. You know what I mean? Like that, the Quill from Guardians 1, probably not even Infinity War. Like he would act different than he does in the holiday special.
Well, it's one thing that I really, this is so small, but one thing that I loved about Love and Thunder, the movie, more than I thought I would from the trailer, is that scene where he's like, you know, you look into their eyes, and it's like the funny scene from the first or second Love and Thunder trailer. And in the trailer, it ended with Quill being like, not at me or something like that. And it's like, that's the punchline. That's not in the movie. In the movie, Quill just like walks away and that he like lets it.
Okay.
Sit. You know what I'm talking about? Like we always talk about how sometimes there's a temptation in the MCU to go like maybe one punchline more than you needed. Like, just sit in it for a second. You don't have to make it into a joke just because it could be. And I just think, like, as we're talking about Quill, that feels like a noted difference from the way we would have seen him respond to that situation in the first Guardians or even the second Guardians. Like, the level of compassion he's having for Thor, I think is, that feels like a notable arc just for that character, let alone kind of the rest of the Guardians.
So that's kind of the overarching plot beats. Like, we talked about how Gamora is now a different Gamora. I think we're going to see that other side of her that we've never seen, this really tough exterior who doesn't know these Guardians, hasn't gone through those things. So that's an important thing. I think you're going to see a lot of development from Rocket, specifically his past, and that's going to be important. And I do think you'll get a deeper look into Nebula and Drax as well with that. Mm-hmm. And then obviously Adam Warlock is going to factor into this. So those are kind of some of the big overarching plot beats from the movies that we've already seen. I did want to land the plane on the James Gunn thing, because you and I have talked off screen a lot about this. Regardless of what you think about the MCU right now, or if you felt like Phase 4 was a step down, or that you liked the stories but there were quality issues, you know, one thing that's really fascinating about the Guardians of the Galaxy and James Gunn is that it does feel like its own thing. Like, it's in the MCU for sure, but it has a free pass to kind of do what it wants. And because of that, I just don't worry at all about the quality. Like, if the plane will be landed, I don't love Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, but I have no concern about if the director has put his 100% heart into it. Like, this is James Gunn's story, and I am just not worried about like CGI issues, about song placements not working, about bad writing. Like, in general, I just know this is going to be a very, very quality movie that is going to be mostly removed from the greater MCU.
Yeah. Which I think is, is perfect right now. You know, like we've had Quantumania, which is so focused on setting up the next saga. I think this is shaping into the movie that I would have always wanted. It's the movie that I, you know, for the brief period of time where James Gunn was not going to be coming back to finish this trilogy, it's the movie that I was really sad to maybe not be getting. So I'm glad that for everything that's happened outside of the MCU, within the MCU story-wise, I like that we've still been able to kind of come back to this conclusion of like of what I think has been a really, really personal story for both Gunn and the cast members, like you were saying earlier.
I'm really excited. The next time that we are talking to people here on the main feed, we'll be on the other side of this thing. And it's always just crazy to me when we get to these moments now that we have a podcast about it, that you only get a few of these moments every year. And so I really hope that people can enjoy this. I hope that you can, I want you to watch it critically, no doubt. Like, I want you to review it like we would, all that stuff. But I also want you just to remember that this is a fun experience. I'm mm-hmm. not nervous about the quality. So go in with like expectations for the quality to be high. Lower the expectations for how many cameos you think you're going to get or like how tied in it's going to be. And just remember that this is meant to be fun and have a really good time with it. I'm really excited. And we're going to see you mm-hmm. on their side where next week we can have our initial reactions episode where we both walk out of the theater and talk about it. And then we can spend a few weeks after that just really breaking down what we saw there. I should say this, and some people don't like to hear this, so maybe fast forward this part, but spoiler, 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 spoiler. There have been a couple really, really early showings and the reviews are like overwhelmingly positive about this film. So if nothing else, that should get even more stoked for next week. Like I said, we have so much going on over here. I can't even begin to list all the ways that you can get involved because it's now gotten so big. So I think we'll come up with some kind of instructional sheet on Discord or on Patreon or on our website or on our newsletter to kind of give everyone the information. And that's how we'll connect with you guys because there's so much. But we're excited about this new era. I hope you guys can enjoy Guardians of the Galaxy. Hopefully you're a little more prepared. Be on the lookout for the friendly reminder on YouTube to share that with your friends and family. And then we'll see you on the other side of this thing right back here on Friends from Work.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90 exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.